We're doing a series on our favorite Bible stories. And as some of you know, I was introduced to a lot of my favorite Bible stories by my dentist. There was a dentist, my sister is visiting here with her husband today, and his name was Dr. Skoretz. And we lived in fear and loathing to go to the dentist. And the only great thing about the dentist office is that he had an illustrated book of all the stories of the Bible. And so I got to see all of these firsthand in the dentist office when I was about 5 or 6 years old. Had no idea where they came from, but they were pretty interesting stories. And so I'm sure there was a story about the one we're going to hear today, the real love story of Jacob and Rachel. It was probably toned down a bit because I will warn you, viewer discretion advised. This is a pretty wild story. So fasten your seatbelts and let's give this a go. The way I'm going to take it is a little bit different than maybe you've heard the sermon before. I'm going to call our message Vacations, Relations, and True Love. And if you don't like the message this week, come back next week. I'm going to try again. So I'm going to be talking about the rest of the story next week. And it is a barn burner. So today we're going to look at Genesis 28 to 35. That's probably 15 pages in your Bible. We're not going to look at all of it, but we're certainly going to hit the high points. Well, you know, as the summertime goes, people start thinking about vacations and kind of getting away. A vacation, what does it mean to you? Does it mean like packing up the camping gear? Or does it mean getting on a plane and going someplace warm and away? And or does it mean, you know, maybe visiting family? Or maybe it's taking somebody on the family vacation. One of the favorites in our family is the Griswold family. I don't know if anybody's ever watched Vacation, you know, Christmas Vacation, European Vacation, Vacation to Vegas. And let's say that those never go very well. So if that's your idea of vacation, good luck with that. It might be an extended period of recreation, especially one spent away from the home or in traveling. So in some ways, a vacation is getting away from it all. Getting away from it all. Or relaxing. But it does have another meaning. And this is, I don't know if you can read this one very well, but they're standing under Mount Rushmore in South Dakota, and there's a mom and a dad and two kids, and the little caption is, "It all came to a head at Mount Rushmore." And I don't know if you've been on any of those family relations and family vacations where it started out like a good idea and then it rained for 17 days. Or maybe there was a little ongoing disagreement. And so what that usually means in terms of vacations is the action of leaving something or maybe someone previously occupied behind. It means to vacate. So a vacation could mean getting away from it all, or it could be vacating something, leaving something behind. So our story is going to be a bit of both today about a vacation, and it turns into true love. But I just wondered if this question has ever been raised in your family van before. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? So, the Bible's a big book. And sometimes when somebody's up at the front and they've been studying this for a week or 2 weeks or 5 weeks or 5 years, they know exactly where they are. But when the people who are listening, they might not know exactly where we are. So we're in the book of Genesis. Genesis is the first book of the Bible. It's a big book. It's got lots of stories and they're epic. And so what we have here is kind of what we see from the beginning. In the beginning, God created the earth, the heavens and the earth. That's Genesis 1. So we have chapters 1 to 11, creation to the Tower of Babel. Then we have the story of Abraham, who was sort of God's first chosen. And then we go to his son, Ishmael and Isaac. Then we go to Isaac's son, Jacob. And that's where we are today. And eventually next week, we're going to end up at Joseph. So we're at chapters 25 to 36, the story of Jacob, and from Joseph, Technicolor Dreamcoat, musical theater, all of those good things is what we'll see next week. So let's focus in on Jacob. So our story of Jacob starts with a little bit of family drama. Jacob was born to his dad would have been Isaac, his mom would have been Rebekah, and he had a problem, and that problem was Esau, and Esau was his big brother, born 5 seconds earlier than he was. And so he was a twin and always had a chip on his shoulder. I mean, let's just get real here for a minute. He had a chip on his shoulder because when he came out of the womb, it said that he was holding on to the heel of his brother Esau. They had issues. They had issues right from the beginning. And so when it comes to vacationing, Jacob's idea of a great vacation would be one away from his brother Esau. Now, it takes a few years to put that into effect, but that's part of the backdrop. And there's one of the most amazing sermons we ever heard, which was a non-sermon, Janet and I, was a sermon on Esau was a hairy man, and Joseph was a smooth-skinned man. And this is part, they were very different, these two brothers, but they were always in competition. Mom, he did that. Dad, can I have his birthright? You know, all kinds of bits and pieces of brotherly competition. And so this is the backdrop to what's going to be a true love story. Jacob wanted to get away from his brother Esau. But that meant leaving his mom and dad. And he was living in a pretty comfortable situation. He was a mama's boy. And Rebecca really, 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 really liked Jacob. So much so that even though she knew by Jewish custom that the older son was supposed to inherit everything and get the whole family farm, as it were, she heard her husband say that he was about to give the birthright to, or the blessing to, the older son, which was perfectly normal. She said to Jacob, I have a plan how you can get everything. You can get the farm. This is what you have to do. You have to go out, kill a sheep. You have to dress yourself up in hairy clothing. I'm not making this up. This is all real. And then serve this to your dad. Smear yourself with some sort of Esau-smelling clothing. And your dad's half blind. So go in and say, I presented all of this stuff to you, Dad. Dad, can I have your blessing? Well, it works like a charm. Except that the dad at the very last moment says, so are you really my son Esau? And what does Jacob say? What, of course, I am your son. Doesn't say Esau, but he does say, I am your son. And he deliberately and premeditatedly deceives his father so that he can get the birthright, the blessing, the inheritance, be number one. Now, this is all going to play very much into the story of true love because Jacob is the master deceiver. In fact, he's actually quite an operator. And he'll do anything to kind of get what he needs to do. And so from a political point of view, you might just call him astute or perhaps ambitious. But he is a class A1 operator. So instead of having to get away from it all, guess how happy his brother Esau is when he finds out that dad has given the entire inheritance to his younger brother. Not very happy at all. And so his mother says, son, got some good news and some bad news. Good news is we've got a vacation. You've got to take it. Bad news is if you don't take it, you're going to be dead. So Jacob has to go on a vacation. He is forced, he has to go to travel to a foreign land, and he has to eventually find something that is going to be familiar to him. That's going to be a bit of a challenge. And so he takes off from Canaan, and he actually goes on quite a journey, and we'll see about that. And what does he find? He finds true love. Two wives, two handmaidens, 13 children. Now, top that for true love, but I digress. I'm getting ahead of myself. That is what he becomes. So let's just look one more time at these relations at home. What do you see in this picture? Who sees a young, beautiful maiden who sees an old, old, old lady. So put your hands up. Who sees the young maiden? Okay. Who sees the old lady? All right. Kind of a matter of perspective. Can you see the other one? Can you see the other one? Who can't see them both? Okay, you're all... Yeah, okay. Keep looking. And the key is the necklace. If you see a necklace, you see the young woman. If you see the necklace, it's a smile, a mouth, it's the old woman. Okay? Got it? Excellent. So, my point here is, it's all a matter of perspective, this story, about true love or true treason. Is it about ambition or deception? And in fact, it's all of the above, because Jacob is a fallen human being. And he kind of fits well into our church, because we're all fallen human beings. Human relations are always changing. And the dynamic you have between brother and sister and parent and child, adult, and adult parent in an old folks home, that's always changing. And that's what this story is so strongly suggesting. That just when you get it figured out, you move on to the next stage and you've lost it. You've got to come to it afresh. Your perspective changes. How you look at the world changes. And what I'm going to suggest, there's only one northern star in your life. There's only one unchanging event. There's only one unchanging person, and that's the Lord Jesus Christ. We're going to talk about him in a minute. So let's just go for like a job reference for Jacob. I'd put down strong-willed, deceptive, intriguing, but always gets what he wants, no matter what the cost. So that's our friend Jacob as he starts out on his vacation. As I said, it was a forced vacation. If there are any of you people that are probably over 40, you still love maps. If you're under 40, you can probably Google this and get the same thing. But I digress. How far did Jacob have to go on vacation? 550 miles. And so if he would be kind of where he would be starting out and say around Jerusalem, down here in the bottom of Beersheba, he ended up very close to Damascus, Aleppo today in modern terms, where everything's going south in Syria. And so basically he made this long journey. A lot of this is very arid country, so he's on a donkey or a camel or walking, and it's not very pleasant. And he ends up at the end of his journey going up to Haran. And in Haran is reputed to be his uncle Laban. And not sure quite, you know, how they developed these long-distance relationships, but his mom's brother was living up in Syria. And so his mom said, you know, pretty much the only place that Esau is not going to be able to find you is if you go to the end of the earth and go to Uncle Laban's. And just stay there, because that's the only place that's safe. So he made his way up there. And that's where we pick up our love story. And the love story of Rachel and Jacob is portrayed as a classic love at first sight. A beautiful maiden in flowing dress, clean clothes, with a staff. She was a shepherdess, just got her nails done. She is ready for the love of her life. Maybe not. But that's how this 18th century painter felt it probably happened. So let's dig into the text a little bit and see love at first sight. True story. While he was talking to them, this is Jacob, and who was he talking to? He's talking to some male shepherds who were gathered around this well, because not much was happening in Syria then. Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherd. Now, interestingly, this is a little bit unusual, because not a lot of women were shepherds. Most of the women stayed at home around the tent compound, but she somehow was a shepherd. And it turns out that she was a shepherd because Laban didn't seem to have any sons, and so he needed somebody to look after the sheep, and so she was the shepherd who was taking care of Laban's sheep. When Jacob saw Rachel, a daughter of his uncle Laban, and Laban's sheep, He went over and he rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. Now, interestingly, if you go back to a couple commentaries on this, this was male bravado. But it's so typical of Jacob, because this is the kind of guy Jacob was. It said in a couple of verses before that, that the shepherds usually had to wait till everybody was assembled so that all of them could collectively have enough strength to move the stone for the well to water the sheep. But this pretty girl comes along, Jacob says, I could do this by myself. And he goes up there and he moves the rock away from the well and says, hi, my name's Jacob. Then Jacob kissed Rachel, rather forward, and began to weep aloud. He had told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah, so she ran and told her father. Now, this may seem a little bit odd to you, because if you do the math on this, they're first cousins, okay? And we kind of get a little squirmy about the first cousin thing, kissing cousins, Arkansas, anyway, but... what I say, I digress, because Janet and I just came back from 17 days in China, and, you know, we really get used to and comfortable with our own norms and mores, and people do things differently thousands of years ago, and they do things differently across the culture, and every time you say, wow, is that ever weird that they eat pig intestines? The first thing you know, you're eating pig intestines. And that's what happened to us in China, and it went from being weird to just tasting weird. But the whole notion that this would be an unusual cultural norm is our cultural norm. And don't get squeamish and hooked up and lose the meaning of this story just because they were first cousins. They were first cousins. But the point is that it was different time, different place, and this is how the story goes. So let's roll. And the theory was they kissed because they were first cousins. This was the first family he had seen in how many weeks or months, and he was found his uncle Laban, and he kissed his cousin, and he thought she was beautiful, and she ran back to her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he hurried to meet him. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home. And there Jacob told him all of these things. Then Laban said, you are my own flesh and blood. And we continue. You are my own flesh and blood. After Jacob had stayed with him for a whole month, Laban said to him, just because you are a relative of mine, should you be working for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be. Now, I mean, my sister and my brother-in-law are here. We grew up in the agricultural world. They still work in the agricultural world. I sort of play in that world. They do the real work. But in agricultural communities, lots of times relatives would come and they would just work for room and board, right? They wouldn't really get paid wages. So this is an unusual offer from Uncle Laban, that he is able to pay his relative to do work on the farm. And so what's the answer? Jacob is always calculating, always thinking, what's a reasonable salary for a guy like me? Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes. Odd kind of concept. But anyway, Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, I will work for 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel. Laban said, it's better that I give her to you than to some other man, so stay here with me. So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. The end. Okay? So it is a real love story. And everybody lived happily ever after. Not loving the outcomes. I read a great quote this week, and Dan and I are just coming up on our 30th anniversary, and I sort of thought, wow, is that ever cool? True love never runs smoothly. Not the truth. I don't know, has anybody ever been there and been truthful and said, True love. You never get those sequels at the Disney movies. They lived happily ever after. They don't make sequels there, right? If they did, they would be different. And there's always a risk that the true love that you started with isn't exactly as easy as you thought it was going to be. And so it happens for Jacob. Night one, day one, true love doesn't work out quite the way he thought. Jacob, the deceiver, is deceived. So how is he deceived? Well, here's the interesting thing. Again, you have to suspend your disbelief a little bit here, because we live in 21st century Canadian society where, you know, the whole wedding thing, there's lots of planning, and, you know, if you haven't seen your bride's face in the last 6 months every day, that's kind of weird. But in the Jewish culture, there was a practice of veiling the bride, and that the man would never see the bride, even through the ceremony, even through going into the house of probably the parents of one of them. And then they would have the wedding night, and then in the morning there'd be a huge celebration, and everybody would bring presents and all that kind of stuff, except the odd thing was he didn't have Rachel. He had Leah. Leah had been substituted during the wedding ceremony for Rachel, and so he ended up going to the parents' house with the wrong woman and woke up the next morning and was very surprised. And you say, really? How possible is that? So, we don't know how possible it is, except that it was totally possible. That's what happened. That's what's recorded. And so, Jacob is just a tad upset. And so, when he is upset, he goes to Laban and he says, how could you do this to me? I've worked 7 years for the hand of Rachel, and here I wake up with Leah. How does that work? And he goes, well, it's kind of a traditional cultural thing. In our culture, the younger daughter doesn't get married before the older daughter. So I figured you probably wouldn't mind, so I gave you the older daughter first. But I'll tell you what, I'm a reasonable man. If you work for another 7 years for me, I'll give you the other daughter. And I'll pay in advance. 1 week, stay with Rachel, or stay with Leah, and the next week you can have Rachel, but you have to work for me for another 7 years. And Jacob, being a reasonable man, said, bring it on. So, that 1 month vacation with Laban turns into 14 years. Actually, it turns into 20 years before he actually goes back to his home. The other thing, Rachel is held hostage by her own body. And Rachel, the beautiful, is held hostage by her own body. So we know that he has these two wives now, and Leah starts having children quickly, and lots of them, and Rachel does not. And Rachel is not amused, and Rachel in that society is judged by how many children she can produce. And if you do the medical math on this, obviously there is that possibility that it was maybe Jacob's problem, but it doesn't look like it's Jacob's problem because everything's working everywhere else. In fact, so much so that Rachel gives her handmaiden, and that works there. And then, let's see, Leah gives Jacob her handmaiden, and that works there. And suddenly, we've got this very blended family. Very blended family. And then, Rachel says, I'm going to die. If I don't have a child, I'm going to die. And lo and behold, God answers her prayer, and she does have a child. And she calls him Joseph, and Joseph becomes the favorite son of Jacob. And he's number 10-ish, I think, around there somewhere. And those are the 12 tribes of Israel. Even today, 12 tribes come from Jacob and his wives. So, where does that leave us? It leaves us in a situation where true love never runs smoothly, and it also makes the definition of home and coming home difficult. So where is home now? Is home Jacob? Is it with Rachel? Is home with Leah? Is home with Laban? Is home with his father, who's still living back in Canaan, which is going to become Israel? And so life does not come in nice packages. And so some of you might feel that this story is like too bizarre to be, you know, useful, or too family-oriented for my situation, because I'm feeling very alone. And maybe I'm by myself. Maybe I'm estranged. Maybe this whole true love thing, it just always grates me the wrong way. And you might say, it's time for me to check out of this message. But I encourage you to think otherwise about this story. And here's the twist on the true love between Jacob and Rachel. The true love between Jacob and Rachel wasn't a fairy tale love. It was an indication of how human we are, and how often we screw up, and how often we have another chance to get it right. And so, I'm going to maintain that there's another way than human true love. And it comes from the whole notion that true love, if you really get down to it, it's hard work. It's a lot of saying and it's a lot of doing, and we have a really fabulous message in the Bible of what true love is. And I think you will have heard it before. 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, it always trusts, it always hopes, it always perseveres. Love never fails. This passage is read at weddings all the time. And how long does it take? A month? A year? Before one of us in the relationship said, this always being kind part, that's really difficult. This always being patient part, that's really difficult. This always trusting is really difficult. And so we sort of have to recalibrate. We have to ask for forgiveness. We have to go back and say, I want to do this again. I want to do this right. But the interesting thing, that's in that marriage relationship where we're constantly having to recalibrate. But God is emblematic of how we can do true love. And I'm really intrigued, Les, can we tee this up? That someone like Van Morrison, born in 1946, popular folk artist from Northern Ireland, Sir Van Morrison now to you and to me, was talking about how frail human love is, but how permanent the love of God is. So can we play this one? We can. We have the technology. Any Van Morrison fans? All right. Okay. Okay, there's selfie. Okay. But if we can't, that's okay. We can come back to it. Oh, we got it. Okay. Van Morrison, and he's talking about how important it is to say I love you to the people that you love. But the reference, I encourage you to go back and take a look at this. It was a song he wrote in 1988. that he talks about the impossibility of doing this well without a reference to the real lover, to the true one. And you sort of think, how did that slip into mainstream music in the 1980s, 90s, 2000, a reference to how frail we are as humans with respect to our love, and yet how much we need to depend on the one true lover, the only one who can really fulfill, in my appreciation, 1 Corinthians 13, 4-8. But it doesn't stop there. Let me encourage you that that's why this message of a true love story between Rachel and Jacob, or Rachel and Jacob and Leah, or Rachel and Jacob and Leah and his handmaids, is really a story about God's true love for us. And I want to take us to a story that's very familiar, the prodigal son, where I think this is indicative of God's love, the invitation to all of us, to have a true love story. When he was still a long way off, his father saw him, his heart pounding, and he ran out and embraced him, and he kissed him. And this was the son who had said, "Dad, I'd rather you be dead. Can you give me my inheritance? I want to go blow it on fast women, fast cars, and fast music, and some Middle Eastern food." Okay? And he's come back now. He's totally penniless. And the father says, "I love you. I've been searching for you." And he gives him an emotive, unconditional, all-embracing love. And what are the consequences? Celebration, celebration, celebration. Go get the fatted calf. So God's joy shared with us is awesome. And for God's love, it's, I think, more than true love, more than true marriage, more than what we see in Corinthians 1:13. So let's circle a square on this. Vacations, relations, and true love. For me, a little personal story here. My dad didn't like vacations, and my sister and I can probably testify to this. We went on vacations maybe two or three times off the farm. But his real vacation was having his kids and grandkids come to the farm. That's kind of the way God is. God likes us so much that he has prepared a place for us. Same thing for my wife and my kids. Being on vacation is being with them. And I don't know if you have that feeling, and certainly I didn't get it when I was a kid and I came home and my parents would go out and buy all my favorite food and put on my favorite music and clean my room and say, "What do you want to do?" It's like, "Just want to chill. Just want to kind of be relaxed." And they're like, "No, I'm on vacation." And that's the way we are now. It's like, "Hey, let's go get some shawarmas. Let's do those fun things that we always do. Let's be on vacation." And even that's when we have bathroom floods and we have this unwelcome house guest called Miscommunication. And she comes and visits. And even if she's visiting, we invite everybody in. Miscommunication is when you miscommunicate with Miscommunication and everything goes wrong. We still are on vacation. But it's nothing, I think, like what your heavenly dad and your brother Jesus are going to be. It's the same thing, only better, more love, more beautiful farmland, and a shorter winter. So that's what heaven's like, unless you're a winter person. That's winter all the time. So have you ever thought of heaven as a vacation destination? Our God offers us the best vacation destination ever, and he saved it the best for last. Jesus said, "In my Father's house there are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I'm going there to prepare a place for you." So if you're hearing God's love, if you're listening for God's love, if you're open to God's love, you're going to have a call to come home. And that's what Jacob was really listening for when he was looking for true love. He thought he was getting a call home. He thought he was going to have a fulsome relationship. He thought he was going to have kids. He thought it was all going to go well. But what he really needed was a call to come home. And he got that call when he was able to realize that God is his true provider. It's a call to a great vacation. It's a call to a great house and home. It's also a call to adult up, folks. It's time to get mature, and it's time to enjoy the call of James in the Bible. God's children, you can live well, live wisely, and live humbly. So what's your story? Are you on vacation now? Are you on vacation to? Or are you on vacation from? Think about that. And how about your relations? Are you helping them in their walk? Or are you getting help? Are you helping you in their walk? Or are they helping you in yours? And so when you hear this concept of true love, I want you to think about it in a different context. I want you to go out of the Jacob and Rachel story, out of the Disney Pixar mold, and get into this whole idea of the 1 Corinthians 13 true love and who can provide you with that. So you might be searching for the right one, or you might be struggling with the right one, but I'm encouraging you to come back home to the right one. And I was going to play you one other song, but it's going to work? Yeah, okay. Might work. This is just one story of one couple's walk with the Lord. And the reason I picked it is because they got a really cool name for a band. It's called Love and the Outcome. And more cooler yet, they're Canadian. They come from Winnipeg. And their husband-wife duo started a band, indie Christian band, in 2012. I just really like the song. And you know what? Your story, their story, our story, it's about true love.
They put it on the market, the house where I was born. 20 years of memories, hard to let it go. Was a mess when they found it, but my father made it home. That's where I began, that's where I come from. Started playing melodies on Grandpa's piano, singing songs about Jesus. Those times were special. Every day you show me another part of my story. There's sure to be some hard times, but a whole lot of beauty. These are the things that matter in life. Living in every moment, cause you can't stop the time. Tomorrow's gonna be yesterday, I don't wanna miss a thing. This is the story you're building. Of December, we went and got married. Then we moved down to Nashville. One day we'll start a family. Then we got some bad news that Mom had cancer. And if she was still here, she'd tell us, remember. Today, I don't want to miss a thing. This is the story you're building. You know all my days. Oh, my tomorrow's a perfect embrace. You're in the middle of it all. And I wanna say, I don't want.